Welcome to the deep dive. You know, for months, we've been talking about AI in the future tense, like, will it be capable? Will it change jobs?
Always looking ahead.
Exactly. But our sources today, it's this dense stack of reports, research. It suggests that whole discussion, it's kind of over.
Yeah, the ground has definitely shifted.
It's shifted from if to, well, how fast and how hard.
Right.
What we've got here is basically evidence. Evidence of this huge shockwave hitting, like, everything at once.
Yeah.
The economy, content platforms, even geopolitics.
It feels like the day AI really showed up with receipts. You know, quantified proof it can compete industrially.
Absolutely. So our mission today for this deep dive is to unpack all that, make sense of these signals, and give you that strategic view.
Right. We're seeing, I think, three main threads in this data from September 26, 2025. First, there's the hard numbers, the proof of AI's threat, maybe, to knowledge work.
The economic replacement idea.
Yeah, that. Second, there's this big split, this kind of strategic disagreement among the tech giants over how they handle all the AI content. This AI slop, people are calling it.
The quality versus quantity thing.
Exactly. And third, you can really see this techno-nationalist idea hardening in Washington. It's becoming much clearer.
Okay, let's dive into that first one then, the economic piece.
Yeah.
Because for years, right, we used academic tests, like how well does the AI do on the LSAT or whatever.
Standard benchmarks, yeah.
But now OpenAI, they've dropped this thing called GDPVAL. And it's totally different. It's designed only to measure AI performance on actual economically valuable work tasks.
It's the real world test, basically. Forget the abstract exams.
And what's striking is just how serious they were about making it relevant.
Oh, yeah. The rigor is pretty intense. They looked across the biggest U.S. economic sectors. We're talking lawyers, engineers, even registered nurses. Real jobs.
44 distinct occupations across 9 sectors.
And the tasks weren't simple, fetch me this kind of things.
No, not at all. They designed these complex, multi-step jobs, long horizon tasks, they call them, stuff that's meant to be genuinely difficult.
That long horizon bit is crucial. It means work that takes time, requires pulling info together, synthesizing it, making judgments, and then producing something professional.
Like drafting a whole legal brief, maybe.
Yeah.
Or coding a full software module.
Exactly that kind of thing. And get this. These tasks took a human expert, and we're talking someone with, like, 14 years of experience on average, 7 hours to finish.
7 hours, okay.
And then the AI's output was graded blind. Human pros ranked it against the human expert's work.
So the big reveal, how did the AI actually do?
Well, this is the headline that kind of stops you in your tracks.
Hmm?
The finding is that the top AI models are, and I'm quoting here, approaching the quality of work produced by industry experts.
Wow, okay. Do they have specific numbers?
They do. OpenAI's own model, GPT-5 High, it got a 40.6% combined win or tie rate against those human experts.
20%. That sounds significant.
It's more than significant when you compare it. That 40.6%, it's almost 3 times better than its predecessor, GPT-4o.
Okay, wait. What was 4o's score?
Just 13.7%. And that was only 15 months ago.
15 months for a nearly 3-fold jump in measured economic ability.
Yeah. That's the kind of progress rate we're seeing. It's exponential in real-world competence.
Okay, 40.6% is huge, but, I mean, how reliable are these benchmarks? Could one model just be better tuned for this specific test? Because I saw Anthropic's Claude, their Opus 4.1.
Ah, right. Good point. Claude actually scored higher.
Yeah, 49% winning rate. So does that mean Claude is just better?
Well, it raises that key question. Better at what? OpenAI was careful to break that down. Claude did really well in things like aesthetics, making the documents look good, formatting. Right. But GPT-5, their model, was apparently superior on factual accuracy and digging up that really specific domain knowledge, which, you know, if you're an enterprise paying for this.
You care more about the facts being right than the font looking perfect.
Pretty much. Accuracy trumps appearance in professional settings.
So, okay, maybe there's nuance in the scores, but whichever model you look at, the underlying economic message seems pretty brutal.
It's unavoidable. The study also looked at efficiency, and it found these models can do these 7-hour human tasks roughly 100 times faster.
Whoa.
And 100 times cheaper.
Okay, hold on. 100 times cheaper. That sounds almost unbelievable. Does that account for, like, the human needed to check the work?
Yeah.
or the cost of retraining people whose jobs are impacted.
That's the caveat, right? It excludes the human oversight loop. So maybe the real saving isn't 100x, maybe it's 75x, maybe 50x.
So massive.
It's still a game changer. And it forces anyone in knowledge work, anyone listening, to really rethink their value proposition.
How so?
Because the value of routine, predictable knowledge work, the stuff GDP will measures while drafting a standard report, summarizing documents, that kind of thing. Its economic value is just set to collapse.
So human value has to shift.
It has to shift towards the things GDPVol wasn't designed to test, like framing complex, ambiguous problems in the first place, building client trust, real creative, divergent thinking. That's where humans need to refocus.
That efficiency push, now quantified by GDPVol, it explains why businesses are jumping in.
Yeah.
But the platforms, the big tech companies, they're already dealing with the fallout, right? This flood of AI content.
Oh, absolutely. And it's causing this major split in strategy. Which brings us to that second thread, the platform wars over content and curation.
Okay. So what are the camps?
Well, on one side, you have, say, OpenAI. They seem to be moving beyond just being a tool you type into. They want to be an agent, something proactive, embedded in your workflow.
Right, like that new ChatGPT Pulse feature they announced. For the pro subscribers, the expensive tier.
Exactly. Pulse isn't waiting for you. It generates these little personalized cards for you proactively. 5 to 10 of them.
And it pulls context from everywhere, right? Your chat history, memory, but also Gmail, Google Calendar.
Yep. Sensitive data streams. The whole play seems to be making ChatGPT indispensable, your central information hub. They want it to be your morning habit, displacing news feeds and aggregators.
So that's one strategy. High value, personalized, deeply integrated. What's the other camp?
The other camp is, well, less refined. It's leaning into what critics are bluntly calling AI slop.
AI slop, meaning?
Basically, low quality, high volume generated stuff. Content made just to grab eyeballs for a second and maybe make a fraction of a cent from ads.
And who's doing that?
Look at Meta. They just launched Vibes. It's a new video feed, short form stuff.
Yeah.
And it's composed entirely of AI generated content.
Entirely, right.
Yeah, using partner models, image generators, video tools. It's basically embracing the chaos. A high volume, low fidelity, attention scraping model.
So Meta's betting on quantity over quality, essentially.
Seems like it. Now, contrast that with someone like Adobe.
Right. Adobe's always focused on the professional creative market.
Exactly. They just launched Firefly Boards. It's like an AI-powered mood board, a collaborative tool, but it's built into their professional creative software suite.
So it's about augmenting the pro workflow, not replacing the feed.
Precisely. Their bet is on keeping those high-value subscribers happy, helping them ideate faster within the tools they already pay for. Quality, integration, professional value.
Two very different bets on where the value lies.
Totally different. And then you have someone like Spotify caught right in the middle of this content explosion.
Yeah, the music situation sounds insane. They're trying to be the curator, drawing a line.
They almost have to. The scale is staggering. Last year, Spotify had to remove 75 million spam tracks.
75 million. That's how big is their actual catalog?
About 100 million legitimate songs. So the spam volume was almost as big as their entire real library.
That's unbelievable. And that spam must dilute the money for actual artists.
Hugely. It messes up the royalty pool. It degrades the user experience. So Spotify's fighting back on three fronts.
All right, what are they?
One, tougher rules against impersonation, especially AI voice deepfakes. Two, a new spam filter specifically designed to catch and downrank this slop, mass uploads, keyword stuffing, that kind of junk.
Makes sense.
And the third.
They're backing this voluntary standard, DDAX, for artists to actually disclose when they've used AI in their tracks. Transparency.
So Spotify's core bet is curation. In a world drowning in AI content, their value is separating the good stuff from the noise.
That seems to be the play. When content becomes infinite and cheap, curation becomes incredibly valuable.
Okay, so we have AI proving its economic worth and platforms struggling with the consequences. Let's move to that third layer. Washington stepping in, this techno-nationalism.
Right, and it's about controlling the key strategic assets, the talent, the platforms themselves, and the underlying hardware supply chains.
And the talent war seems to be getting really nasty, like this XAI lawsuit against OpenAI.
Oh yeah, that's a big one. High-stakes stuff. XAI is accusing OpenAI of basically running a strategic campaign to steal trade secrets by poaching their key people. And the claims are specific, right? Not just poaching, but taking actual code.
We're very specific. They're alleging OpenAI nabbed the source code for Grok, XAI's chatbot, and also their playbook for how to build out data centers really fast.
So this isn't just a standard lawsuit over non-competes.
No, no. It's much bigger. It's really a proxy fight over controlling the absolute top tier of AI talent, where they can work, and what knowledge they can take with them. The outcome could seriously reshape the competitive map.
And this idea of controlling tech assets, it extends to the platforms too. We finally saw the end of the TikTok saga.
Yep, that finally got resolved. President Trump signed off on the deal. TikTok's U.S. operations sold for, what, $14
billion? $14 billion, yeah, to a U.S.-led group. But the structure is the interesting part, isn't it?
It really is. The new company, TikTok US, has this whole new governance structure. Oracle's got a huge role, basically overseeing security.
Hosting US user data, reviewing the algorithm.
Right. ByteDance, the original Chinese owner, keeps a stake, but it's minority, non-controlling, less than 20%.
So the US government basically forced a structure that limits foreign control and ensures US oversight.
Exactly. It sets a clear precedent for how they might deal with other foreign-owned tech platforms they see as a national security risk. Control the platform.
Control the talent. Control the platform. What about the hardware? The chips?
That's the third leg. And there's this really radical policy proposal gaining steam. The 1.1 chip mandate.
1-to-1.
Meaning the proposal is that for every semiconductor chip a company imports, they have to ensure an equivalent chip is manufactured domestically, like on their behalf. A 1-to-1 ratio.
Wow. How would they enforce that?
With massive tariffs. If you import more than you have made domestically, you could face tariffs up to 100% on the difference.
That's huge. So the goal is clearly to force manufacturing back to the U.S., or at least onshore it. Reduce reliance on places like Taiwan.
Absolutely. It's pure industrial policy aimed at supply chain security. And it's obviously a massive potential boost for chip fabs being built in the U.S. by companies like TSMC, Micron, Samsung.
So the government is regulating, litigating, mandating, but they're also becoming a huge AI customer themselves, right?
Oh, definitely. They're not just setting the rules. They're buying the tech. Look at the Coast Guard just got $350 million earmarked specifically for robotics and autonomous systems.
What kind of systems?
Underwater drones, ROVs, ground robots, UGVs, aerial drones, UAS, all the unmanned stuff.
And then there's XAI again, undercutting everyone to get into government agencies.
Yeah, that was a classic market share grab. They won a GSA contract to put their Grok 4 chatbots into basically all federal agencies for like 42 cents per agency.
42 cents? That's practically free.
It's a loss leader, right.
Yeah.
Get your foot in the door, get embedded across the entire government, learn from those interactions, gain massive institutional access. Very strategic.
Okay, so we've seen the economic impact, the platform wars, the government moves. Let's zoom out a bit. How is AI actually showing up right now, like in the wild, shaping science, shaping culture?
Good question. Because it's not just business and politics. We have a couple of really potent examples from today's sources.
Like the weather situation, yeah. Hurricane Humberto, and this potential second storm, Imelda.
Exactly. It's a really tricky forecast scenario because it looks like we might see what's called the Fujiwara effect.
That's where two cyclones kind of orbit each other, right?
Yeah, they interact in this complex dance. And the problem is our traditional weather models, the numerical ones, they really struggle with that. They're not great at predicting these non-linear interactions accurately.
They tend to just predict they'll merge or fly apart.
Often, yeah. They miss the subtle orbiting pattern. But this is where AI models, like the ones Google's DeepMind has been developing, show a real advantage.
Yeah, so.
Because they're trained differently. They learn from just vast amounts of data, including satellite imagery, radar, historical patterns, multimodal data. They can pick up on these really subtle signals and nonlinear dynamics that the old models miss.
So the AI gives a better prediction of that Fujiwara interaction?
Potentially, yes. A significantly more accurate forecast. And when you're talking about hurricanes interacting near coastlines, that accuracy directly translates into better evacuation orders, potentially saving lives, public safety impact.
A life or death application, literally.
Right. And then if you shift from predicting the physical world to shaping our understanding of the social world, AI's impact is just as profound, maybe even more complicated.
You're thinking about the news around Assata Shakur's death.
Exactly. Her legacy is incredibly contested, right? To some, she's a convicted killer of a state trooper. To others, a revolutionary icon, a political exile, deeply polarizing figure.
And normally, the narrative around someone like that, their obituary, their legacy, it gets hashed out. by journalists, historians, over days, weeks.
Right. It used to be a slower, more deliberate process of constructing cultural memory. But what happens now?
Now it happens in hours on social media feeds.
Driven by algorithms. This is the crucial part. Those platforms, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, whatever, they aren't optimizing for historical accuracy or nuance.
They're optimizing for engagement. Clicks, shares, comments, emotion.
Precisely. So the narrative about Assata Shakur, whether it's condemnatory or celebratory, the version that generates the strongest emotional reaction gets amplified fastest and pushed hardest by the algorithms.
Which leads to?
Sharper polarization. People getting locked into information bubbles where they only see the narrative that confirms their existing bias and triggers that emotional response. The AI isn't neutral. It actively shapes collective memory by rewarding intensity over understanding.
So the AI becomes the arbiter of history, in a way, based on what gets the most clicks.
It's a powerful, unelected arbiter, yeah. Often prioritizing engagement metrics over reasoned debate or factual complexity.
Okay, let's try and pull these threads together then. What's the big picture from today?
Well, we saw AI, through GDPVAL, deliver quantitative proof that it can compete with experienced humans on valuable economic tasks. That's huge.
Right. Then we saw the platforms fracturing, splitting into camps, high-value integration versus high-volume slop as they grapple with the sheer amount of AI content, and Spotify trying to be the quality filter.
Mm-hmm. And then we saw governments, especially the U.S., enacting these techno-nationalist policies, trying to control the talent through lawsuits, control the platforms like TikTok, and control the hardware supply chain with things like the chip mandate.
While also becoming a massive AI customer itself.
Exactly. So the key takeaway, I think, is that we absolutely have to stop thinking about AI as just like a better calculator or a fancy spell checker.
It's not just a tool for specific tasks anymore.
Not at all. It's now this deeply integrated force. It's quantifying economic value in new ways. It's actively shaping cultural memory and history. It's influencing national security and geopolitics all at the same time.
It's not a slow creep. It feels more like a system shock, like you said earlier.
Definitely. It's hitting multiple domains simultaneously, enforcing rapid adaptation.
So here's maybe the final thought to leave people with. We have GDPVAL telling us AI can do routine knowledge work 100 times faster and cheaper than a human.
Okay.
The economic replacement signal.
But then we have the Assata Shakur example showing us that the same underlying technology, the algorithms, are controlling the platforms where we even debate what human value is, what his crew means.
Right. One part commoditizes human labor, the other shapes human understanding.
So if AI is coming for the routine tasks while also shaping the very definition of what's important, what history we remember, what constitutes human value, what's the real battleground we should be watching? Where does human agency actually reside in that equation?